This morning, we continue our conversations with some of the women who will be inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in Seneca Falls next week. Amy Mullins first showed up on the world stage as an athlete, but she has a list of accomplishments a mile long. Amy was born without shin bones and learned to walk on prosthetic legs by the age of 2. She conceived of and was the first person to wear prostheses modeled after the hind legs of a cheetah in an athletic competition. She is a model, a motivational speaker, and she was an intelligence analyst at the Pentagon at the age of 17. And on September 16th, Amy Mullins will be among 10 new inductees at the National Women's Hall of Fame. And we're so happy that she was able to spare a few minutes for us this morning. Welcome. It's so good to meet you.
Thanks, Beth. It's good to be here.
You've been breaking through barriers, obviously, throughout your life. Have you ever considered gender a barrier?
Sure. I mean, in my current endeavor, which is acting, it's something that I think every woman feels, for sure. I mean, the moment you turn 29, you're getting offered sort of grandmother roles. And you think I'm kidding, I'm not. It is extraordinary just how there's just these. I was listening to the audiobook of Tina Fey's Bossy Pants the other day while my husband and I were plastering a room. And, you know, she addresses this a lot, just being in her, in Second City in Chicago with improv, and then saying, we can't have three out of the 6 cast members be women because there just won't be enough parts to go around. She's like, but we're making it up. It's improv. We're making up the scenes. How could you say that? So I think there is something ingrained, certainly, and I have experienced it, but not to the same egregious effect that I've experienced just an innate discrimination against what people perceive as disability.
Yeah, in one of your TED Talks, in fact, you make a brilliant case for how a disability really isn't a disability at all. It can be the opposite. It can be an asset. Would you tell that story briefly about how you got a room full of children to see your prosthesis as this beautiful thing?
Sure. Well, it was, you know, partially based on the way that I grew up as a child in the 80s and 90s, and I was surrounded with pop culture. You know, we had the Terminator, where you saw this robot with articulated ankles and knees, and RoboCop, and, you know, it's then going into sort of Avatar and this new life on the internet with something like Second Life, where people were creating avatars and realizing that this feeling that I'd had, which is, why does this have to be some onus, some heavy onus, like, oh, we have to replace this missing part of her limb, and the best we can do is this horrible rubberized foot and this horrible wooden leg. So fast forward, taking, going to people who were Hollywood special effects, prosthetic makeup artists, and wax museum designers, and jewelry designers, and fashion designers, and, you know, people who didn't have the baggage of what a prosthetic should be, designing prosthetics. And I was asked to speak to a group of kids who are around about 8 years old, which is the most terrifying audience ever. You know,
yeah.
you're sort of octogenarians and you're the under 8 crowd, and for the exact same reason. They have no edit button. They will say exactly what they think, and they're usually right. So, you know, I thought, oh man, show and tell. That's how I have to do this, is just engage them physically. And it was at the Children's Museum in Boston. So I thought the tactile approach would be best. And I, you know, you hear the teachers and the administrators trying to figure out ways to make this group of, you know, 7 and 8 year olds subdued and polite and actually not curious, which is against human nature. And so I had brought all this bag of different legs, and I was in the auditorium alone, and I had a table in front of me on the stage, and I had laid out all these different legs, and I heard the head wrangling administrator say to these kids, listen, kids, listen to me, whatever you do, just please don't stare at her legs. I overheard this, and I thought, no, that's exactly the point. Don't inculcate these children that there's something to be avoided here, that there's something wrong with me, especially when I've come to share these stories about all the different kinds of legs I've been able to have built for me and try out and be the guinea pig for. So I made a deal with these teachers to give me 2 minutes alone with the kids before any adults came in. And so when the kids came in, they just descended on this table. And they did what kids do when there's this tactile thing in front of them. They touched it, and they were, you know, trying to put all their weight on the sprinting leg to see if they could bounce on it. And, the, you know, were tickling my toes of the silicone feet that look incredibly, you know, like flesh and bone, and seeing if I had a reaction standing 10 feet away and, you know, smelling them to see if the feet smelled bad. And everything. And I said, kids, just quickly, imagine that you could build any legs you wanted for me. And I want to just be able to jump over a house, just two stories, maybe three stories, but, you know, just jump over a house. What kind of legs would you build me? And immediately some kid goes, should be a kangaroo. And someone else said, should be a frog. And someone said, it should be Go-Go Gadget. And then some kid went, wait, why wouldn't you want to fly too? Why would you just want to jump? And all the kids went, yeah. And I was like, yeah, yes, of course. Of course I want to fly too. Look at me limiting myself to something as banal as just jumping over a house. And it was so immediate. I mean, this happened in under 2 minutes, that if I hadn't tried to prevent these kids looking at me, being trained to look at me as someone who was disabled, less capable than them, they wouldn't have had this self, you know, this discovery on their own of going, we can make her body go much further, and she could even possibly be super abled and be able to do things that our flesh and bone legs can't do yet. And that's where I found this extremely thrilling paradigm shift happening in society, is that, and we're seeing it now across the board with, you know, more gender fluidity and people really asking to have more autonomy over their identity and to have the power to change it as their life goes on.
It's pretty evident that you have this powerful sense of self-motivation, and it was there very early in your life. Where does that come from?
Oh, I don't know. You said it was evident that it was there early, that's for sure. I mean, I'm not a parent yet, but I'm now at the age where my friends are starting to have children, and everyone says it's kind of wild. These kids come out, their personalities are almost fully formed. They have a drive, or they are reticent to engage with the world, or some of these things are really innate. But I also think, you know, I believe that your environment and how you're treated in these formative years is very important. And the truth is, my parents, you know, my dad's an immigrant from Ireland. My mom is one of 11 kids, and you know, they had bigger problems on their plate than worrying about if I was going to be made fun of at school, if I was being stared at all the time, which I was. And it was very much on me to develop a sense of self that was strong enough to withstand that kind of scrutiny and mockery and, you know, the kind of humiliation that is generally only reserved for puberty. But in my life, it started a lot earlier, and that formed a resilience in me. And I was always headstrong. I was always very stubborn, very determined, and always had a very healthy sense of naivete, of complete possibility. And that's the quality that I struggle to hold on to now, where I still absolutely believe that I can play parts. Like Hollywood can see me in roles to play parts of women that don't have prosthetic legs. And it is the hardest battle I have fought, but it's happening.
Is that why you decided also to get into fashion modeling?
Well, fashion modeling was, you know, that was a kind of a weird detour. I certainly never, it wasn't anything I'd ever wanted to do as a little girl. I was a gawky, awkward-looking child my whole, pretty much after the age of 7. That was the truth. I was probably a cute as a toddler, and then not, really not. And yet, you know, I had spent so much time in hospital as a kid that I learned how powerful my imagination was, and I could completely reimagine myself. And oftentimes I would be men in my daydreams. And, or if I was women, they were very very powerful women. They were always leaders and, you know, people who could sort of command de facto armies. And it's something that I know, like I said, it's always been there, but it has to be honed and tested. And as far as I was concerned, when I first became exposed to the world of design, you know, I spoke at my first TED conference. I think I had graduated college like that week. So I was 20, barely 21, if that. And, you know, there I was sitting with Frank Gehry and all these incredible people and looking, being trained to look at objects that in a way I hadn't before. And people were coming up to me saying, you know, you're really beautiful. You don't look disabled. And I thought, that's so amazing because I don't feel disabled. And also, I guarantee you that the pinup calendar you have on your garage wall has more, these women have more prosthetic in their body than I do.
Yeah.
And Photoshop. I mean, it's this idea that you shave off part of a nose and it's enhancement, or you put a prosthetic in a breast cavity, it's augmentation. But you shave off part of a limb and you put a prosthetic, it's disability. And that's where the idea of taking a medium like fashion, which has so much frivolity in it, and yet has a very powerful reach and an impact, I thought it could be a great forum to talk about this. Like, what does a sexy body have to look like, and what is beauty, and what's a powerful image?
What does it mean to you, Amy, to be inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame? You've had so many accomplishments and accolades throughout your life. Does this feel different?
It does, Beth. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of nervous, and I'm kind of freaked out. When I got the news, I was actually sitting in a chair getting my hair cut, and this woman has known me for nearly 15 years, and I was like, I don't know if I'm reading this right. Is that right? Am I being asked to come, like, present an award to an inductee? Or I think I'm being inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. And she went, "Well, you're so young." And I said, there's a feeling, certainly for me, what it's done is it's really galvanized me to have the same fire and chutzpah. And like I said, genuine naivete, like, I can do this. I can do anything if I set my mind to it, which is a wonderful naivete, and most people have it beaten out of them just because of life. And it has galvanized me to continue to go forth and push on doors that are closed to me until they open, or until I find someone who helps me carve out a new door.
What's next for you? And in fact, you mentioned being young. May I ask how old you are now?
I just turned 42.
So at 42, you're in the National Women's Hall of Fame. You've been an actor. You've been a model. Your TED Talks are among the most listened to and viewed in the world, I think. So what's next? What do you want to conquer next?
Well, I wouldn't say that I've conquered the acting world at all, but, you know, it's great. You know, I just was in, I played a funny character part on a comedy that apparently aired last night. I woke up to a bunch of text messages about it because it's...
What's it called?
Oh, it's a show called Odd Mom Out on Bravo. And,
oh, yeah.
And it was, you know, like I said, at least I am actually getting to do it. I'm playing women, I'm playing characters that don't have prosthetic legs. So that is my, you know, my real goal. We see actors all the time who in real life don't have any kind of a physical or emotional or intellectual disability, and they play characters who do. But we rarely get to see the opposite, if at all. And so that's something that I'm still chipping away at, but it's, you know, it's definitely getting there. And also I'm starting to produce. So I am going to be producing my first feature film next spring, which is a huge responsibility that I felt myself gulp when I actually said it out loud, but that's happening. And I'm excited. I'm excited. When I think about how many Right now, we are in this golden age of television, and there's so many platforms now that want original content, and you do see people who are smart and curious and passionate about storytelling being given opportunities that just weren't there even 10 years ago. So I think it's a really exciting time, and I'm also excited that some of my peer groups are now starting to be able to have some power in this industry, and you're getting to see some really young, I mean, I'm on a show called Stranger Things, and the creators, and the writers and directors, they're twins who are like 32, I think, the Duffer brothers. So it's an exciting time where I feel like I don't have to convince someone who's 30 that even though I have prosthetic legs, I don't need to play a character who does. I do have to convince someone generally who's in their 60s. Or older about that.
Wow, that says a lot, doesn't it? We've come a long way. It's never too late to learn this, though. And I love what was the phrase you used? The gift of naivete. I love that.
I think it is a gift. I think it's so beautiful that we're all born with it. I mean, all children think that they can be whoever they want to be until they're repeatedly told that they can't. And I think it's something we really have to fight to hold on to, that you know, to remember to lean into yourself, trust in the vision of who you want to become, and know that you can change it as you go along. Reserve the right to change and grow and rewrite as you're going. And that's, I feel like, hopefully that's what living your life well is.
Amy Mullins, congratulations on making it into the Women's Hall of Fame. Women from all over the world recognized for their historic achievements. You will be one of them inducted in the class of 2017 on September 16th. And this is a whole weekend at Seneca Falls that is part of a celebration of the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote here in New York State.
Yes. Oh, actually, and there's a writing contest. There's for young high school women in upstate New York. If you write an essay about how you have embraced some adversity in your life and what it's done for you to pivot with it and dance with it, you can win a ticket to come sit at my table for the induction ceremony.
What a great opportunity. How do young women do that if they want to write an essay and enter that?
There's an email. They can send an email to adversity@newleafspeakers.com. And they'll get an auto reply with full details of how to submit their essays. But they're due by next Monday, and then I have to spend the next 2 days going through them, and I get to help select the winner.
Amy, it's been an honor to talk to you. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.